This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
So my background is in communication studies, so I'm biased towards communication. I tend to look at communication as a spiritual practice, and I find that I think that God really comes alive in our communication with each other and developing relationships, which is why I do believe that discipleship is mostly about relationships and not about information consumption, right? I know we Episcopalians, we love to learn about things, but we don't always put it into practice together, right? Like we love doing a six-week study about prayer, but we don't always have, hey, let's have 6 weeks and pray together, right? Like, so there's a difference in the formational experience, right? When we actually turn to each other and get to know each other a little bit. So how did you find that? Good? Yeah, great. Okay, so we're going to keep going with some questions, but some of them we'll do together and some of them you'll do in your groups, okay? So the next one is one for all of us. So when we think about formation, Paul tells us quite a lot about formation in Romans chapter 12 in particular, where he says it's pretty easy to be conformed to culture and it's harder to be transformed by Christ, right? So he's telling us quite a lot about formation in Romans chapter 12. And culture is a really powerful formation machine when you think about it, right? It's 24/7. It's very entertaining. And we're being formed, whether we know it or not, whether we want it or not, whether we like it or not. We're always being formed, which is what Paul is pointing out. So we have to be really careful what we're being formed into as disciples of Jesus, right? And you've probably heard before that Christianity is intended or supposed to be counter to the culture. But we don't always stop and pause and reflect on, well, what is it that we're counter to, right? And I don't mean anti-culture. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying counter practice to the cultural ways that we're being formed all the time, right? Like even commercials is when I was teaching, I would always tell my students, commercials are the exact opposite of any healthy counseling session you will ever have. Because the commercial is designed to tell you over and over that something is wrong with you and there's something missing in your life and you're incomplete and you have a lack. But if you just buy my product, then you'll be fulfilled, right? So it's always, we're getting these messages. And so even something as simple as a 20 or 30 second commercial is forming us, but it's not really forming us in the ways probably that we want or need to be formed. So the question for us right now is, into what have we been formed? So people always ask me, like, what is formation? Which is a good question, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I think a more interesting question is, into what have we been formed, or are we being formed? So it can be by our larger culture, or it could be into what are we being formed, have we been formed in church, right? But let's focus on the larger culture, because this is the big, powerful formation machine that's happening 24/7. So who has some thoughts on this? Yes.
Alienation and
nihilism. Okay, that's a new one for me. I almost put annihilation. I combined them both. Alienation. Nihilism. Okay.
Constant consumer.
Okay, yeah. That's the big one right there, right? Consumers. Propaganda. Propaganda, okay. Propaganda.
You probably need to offer propaganda, put a branch and put political propaganda and cultural propaganda.
Okay. Political, cultural. I like it.
Technology.
Positive and negative. Positive and negative. But we're always being formed by it, right? Yeah. Positive, negative.
That makes sense for like individuals, right? Sometimes we're like disconnected from our community, right? And we just like we're told to think that we're not responsible for our neighbors and we shouldn't care about our neighbors, right?
So right. Yeah, individualism is actually, something Paul is pretty radically opposed to, actually. But it is a message we get in our culture pretty consistently. Individualism and individual freedom, right? Which, of course, freedom in that sense is not, like the definition is actually the definition of selfishness, to do what you want, when you want, however you want to do it, right? Uneasy, unrest, disquiet.
Because I think so many of our communities were like in more fragmented spaces. It's like
put
how to be your whole self, or like you can't.
I like that part.
Yeah, I feel like there's more nervousness around finding common ground with people.
Yes, yeah. I got anxious down here with uneasy.
Being respectful.
Okay. To be respectful, or there's. Oh, so there's a lack of that.
Other points of views. Also trying to be like respectful, you know, but it's just like, oh, I don't know where to.
Yeah. Okay.
I think there's like an underlying choosing pricing, and so you can't really, you don't know if they're on your side or the other side on any number of things.
I think there's underlying everything is there's a lot of fear in various forms.
Good one.
And also shame.
Oh. Yeah.
Fear and shame.
Right.
That is pervasive.
It is pervasive, yes.
I think hand in hand with consumerism is like a striving towards an ideal that may not be attainable. So like wealth, beauty.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see.
That's part of what I meant by cultural propaganda. Yeah.
Okay. It's like a platonic sort of good, true, and beautiful for consumers. Yeah.
To the fear and shame, I would just like to be able to talk to people and be able to share ideas and information without someone being angry.
Yeah. I'm going to put,
really getting, I'm trying to change me, but in an angry way.
Yeah. So I put barriers and bunkers as, you know, if we try to be bridge builders, that's what we should hope for. Honestly, as disciples of Jesus, which I think is, you know, if we think about the seventh beatitude, which is kind of the pinnacle beatitude before the eighth one, which is never, never, never give up, right? And also that you might face some persecution and adversity if you try to be a peacemaker, which is number 7. Peacemaking is bridge building. And along the way, we run into these barriers and we hit these bunkers, and even sometimes bludgeons, right? People are can be very aggressive about different opinions and perspectives, and driven by fear and shame, of course, right? So I think that's a good one. Notice too, like most of these are about communication, which is why both Jesus and Paul actually talk a lot about communication. And even if we look at something as well known as love God, love yourself, and love your neighbor, those are all commandments about communication, right? Communicating with God and ourselves and with our neighbors, right? These are, how do we practice this communication? And those are what most of Jesus's parables are about, is the ways that we communicate with each other. So we look at this, and especially us versus them, right, is powerful. It is one of the most insidious things about our communication, in my opinion. But also, if we look in Scripture, we see this thing that's talked about over and over, which is diabolos, right? Are y'all familiar with this term, diabolos? Are you familiar with the term diabolo in any way? Sometimes it's like the devil. Yeah. But if we take the Greek word apart, it's diabalo, which is to throw in opposite directions. Balo is to throw, and dia is in two diametrically opposed directions. So it's this idea of tearing things apart, divisiveness. And I think divisiveness is actually one of the most, if I was going to say the word evil, I would say it's evil. Right? Divisiveness is this tearing apart and breaking. And fragmentation is such a good word, right? Fragmentation. And I think culture, especially a culture, I mean, it's not just American culture, it's any culture, is designed in some way to dominate the people that is under that system, right? Because we can't have a bunch of people that just like come alive, right? We need people to sort of stay asleep, right? So they can be controlled in different ways. So the culture is designed to sort of make us exhausted and burned out and too tired to come alive. The problem with that is that if we look at Scripture, the whole thing is about coming alive and being liberated. And if you, even in Ephesians, you know, it says, wake up, O sleeper, and rise from the dead, and the light of Christ will shine upon you. It's about waking up. But these culture is designed to sort of keep people asleep. So when we're looking about into what have we been formed, and it's not to be a complete downer on culture. There's a lot of great things about culture, but there's also a sort of like domination system embedded within it as well. So into what have we been formed? These don't look super great. You all put these up here, and they're all, I would consider these to be negative. A tad. And depressing. And wow, why do we live in this toxic wasteland? Yeah, great question. So these are all what I would consider to be really like poisonous to our soul, right? So it's no wonder then that we see a bunch of like hatefulness in our world, divisiveness in our world, anger in our world. I mean, I would be angry too. Are we not angry? A lot. I mean, driving in traffic every day for me reminds me that I am angry, right? It is a hard spiritual practice for me to drive in traffic. I finally had to just take myself out of the fast lane, and I only drive in the right lane now. I'm like, I just can't do it, because if I get over there, I just go into it, yelling at people, right? So, if we're all poisoned, though, then we're all poisoned. Not just me, But also those people over there that I don't agree with, we're all poisoned. We all have this that we're living inside of, right? And so this us versus them narrative is really not going to work. And in fact, Jesus spends a lot of time trying to undermine the us versus them narrative and says, stop doing that. But it's hard for us because we're cautious and suspicious, right? Somebody said, we don't want to reveal ourselves totally because we don't know what the other person believes. And that's true, right? Because we're nervous about it. And when we meet somebody who disagrees with us, we immediately go, oh no, right? We're constantly putting people into us and them categories, like and dislike categories. Are we not? Yes? Y'all are agreeing with me? The silence is agreement. Okay, good. Okay, so then if this is all true, and we're supposed to be undermining us versus them narratives, and we're supposed to be thinking like, I should stop making villains out of people, right? Jesus said, start turning your enemies into neighbors and stop turning your neighbors into enemies. That's a good idea. But I keep seeing villains everywhere I go, and boy, do I feel justified in it, right? How dare they, those people over there, do such things, even though they're poisoned in the same ways that I am. But I know that I'm right, for sure, right? And they're not. Well, that's a hard place to be, and that causes additional fragmentation. So if this is what we're being formed into, and it's creating this constant sort of like unrest, anxiety, what are we being formed into in the church?
Depends on the church, but
in general, if it's
like the opposite of some of that.
Okay, so, great.
Like neighborliness,
okay.
Vessel that can absorb and radiate the peace of God, which passes all understanding.
Okay. I'm going to put vessel.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm paraphrasing
that. That's good. Okay.
And trying to learn to love your enemies, which is almost impossible.
Yeah, it is, actually. Almost impossible.
So just on that thought, like, one thing that I feel like is helpful for me is to, like, divide people and their behavior. So I might hate someone's action or their behavior, but not them as a person because we can all be redeemed by God.
Okay, so I'm going to put antidote to the poison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about commitment?
Yes.
Changing situations.
Okay. Okay.
Like sporting. Helping people recognize that whatever their work is and however they affect their community is ministry.
Oh. And
that they are a disciple.
Great. Anything else?
Maybe kind of a safe space to
safe space.
You go out in the world and you experience all of those negative things on the left-hand side of the board and you come here to kind of reaffirm.
Yeah. And maybe practice.
Yeah.
Practicing. What a great thing for the church to be a place where we can practice safely with each other in order to go out into the world. How cool is that? It's like a laboratory where we can practice these things that are actually almost impossible. These things are the, like, norm. This is the norm and the given. We're trying to practice the almost impossible in order to be counter to all of this. So I can see how frustrating that was for, like, Paul, right? I can see why he lost his temper a few times. Look, people, we're just trying to form people into this new thing that's totally contrary or, you know, to this other thing. I don't understand why you can't. You've been doing this for 40 years. You've been doing this for like 40 or 50 or 60 years of your life. And now I want you to do this totally different thing. Well, that's going to be hard. That's going to be really hard. Especially since even when we get this amazing gift to be a laboratory and practice together, but how long are we together today? A couple hours. Versus all the other hours. So this is the 2 hours that's trying to hold back the tsunami. Now, I do want to say our prayer book is also a formation machine. If we live within the prayer book system, which is also difficult to do, right? I mean, like, on the daily, right? It's hard, but it is there. It is another formation machine that we can participate within the prayer book system, which is very cool for our tradition, right? And it does offer a counter to this. Okay, so now, let me see what time. Man, it's just flying by like it always does. Let's get back into your groups. Now that we've had this conversation, easy question. What is discipleship? That was a joke. It's not an easy question. But everybody just talk. There's no right or wrong answer. Just talk about it. See if your group can come up with like one thing to say that we'll share with everybody. What is discipleship? Does everybody have like a statement? Yeah, okay. Who wants to go first? Everybody wants to go first, but you're all being gracious. You going first? You volunteered.
That wasn't what that was. discipleship is hearing God's call to you, even though sometimes it's only a whisper, and transmitting that call to improve the lives of others.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. So listening.
Okay, we'll change this. We'll run with that.
So listening and receptivity and transmission. Man, I really like that. Great. Receptivity is actually the primary posture that Jesus teaches us, especially if we look at some of his practices, like turning the other cheek, which is not about being a spiritual doormat, by the way. It's actually a very empowering practice and very difficult, but it's about receptivity. We think that we only have three choices in life, being passive, aggressive, or passive aggressive. And Jesus says, but there's a fourth option, receptivity, listening, transmission. Yeah, great. Okay, who's next?
I'll volunteer to say what I'm going to volunteer my neighbor role.
I see.
Oh, yeah.
I'm ready.
The theme is
here we go.
Walk the walk.
Walk the walk. Talk the talk. Okay. Walk the walk. So I'm going to cheat because I heard you say modeling earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put modeling down. Yeah, modeling. I'm also going to put mentoring. Modeling and mentoring is discipleship. Walk the walk, talk the talk. But modeling and mentoring, because how else is it going to happen? Like, we had a teacher who modeled mentoring as discipleship, relationship building as discipleship, and then said, go do that with more disciples. So we're disciples, but also teachers who are supposed to be creating additional disciples, which is through modeling and mentoring. Okay, y'all got great. This is excellent right here. Who's next?
We talked a lot about what you were saying about, like, we very quickly were like, well, we know what a disciple is, but what is the ship part? And then the leadership and relationship and the sort of, don't just have your eyes on the following, but like paying attention to who is with you on that process.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the ancient model of discipleship is didaskalos and mathetes, which is like people are looking for teachers. People are looking to model. Like, that relationship in the ancient world was so powerful, and it meant that you would literally, as we see in the Gospels, you, and it wasn't just for Jesus, it was for any of the teachers, like the moral philosophers of the time. You would leave everything to follow them, to become like them, to actually imitate everything that they were doing so that then your life would look like their life. And that's a really powerful model of discipleship. I'm not saying that we're all supposed to like leave everything, but this idea of relationship and mentorship and modeling is in there, right? And leading people as we ourselves are led. See, it's a whole cycle. Okay, yes.
Well, it just kind of reminded me, one of, we were talking about, like, we do advocacy work, and it's also empowering, like, our discipleship is empowering through the church to do, like, advocacy work, to do things, to be a disciple in ways that we might not have been.
Yeah.
So empowerment, advocacy.
Yeah, we certainly see that a lot. You know, even in Jesus's ministry, he does a lot of advocacy work and a lot of empowerment. His practices are about empowerment. They're never about disempowerment. Sometimes we turn his practices into disempowering things, but they were not intended to be disempowering. As I said with the turning the other cheek, historically, that's been interpreted in some pretty negative and harmful ways, but it was never intended to be negative and harmful. It was always about empowerment. Okay, so, did everybody go? Yes. Okay, we only have 5 minutes. What a bummer. This is what happens when you have good conversations, though. Like, you just run out of time. So, I also want to point out, though, since we're about to run out of time, what we've all been doing together today is a form of scriptural discernment, right? So we started sort of with Romans chapter 12, and we've been kind of moving through what are we thinking, but we've also been referencing other scriptures as well along the way, but we're discerning. We're discerning into what have we been formed, what are we maybe going to be formed into, and what is discipleship? These are all questions for discernment. And discernment does really need to be an ongoing thing. And it's actually what we do see in the New Testament with Paul and his communities. They were constantly coming together and discerning, what is discipleship? How do we do this thing? And it's a question we should be asking ourselves together on a regular basis, right? What is discipleship? How do we do it? What does it mean to us? And so discernment's not just this like isolated, these little isolated times in our lives, right? Every moment is a formation moment. That's the logic of Romans 12. Every moment is a formation moment. And so we have to take advantage of all these moments. They can be micro-formations of discernment. Yes?
I think, like, to what you're saying, then it behooves us to think about how we're spending our moments.
Yes.
And how our moments prepare us or protect us in our ability to be disciples.
Yes.
And so, like, we can just decide to not have, like, Amazon on our phone. You know, like, we
that
can
could
decide
be one.
To
yeah.
change our relationship with new media or, you know, just create spaces where that's something that we pay attention to, but to just take that constant from
yeah.
out of our consciousness to be more freed up to do meaningful discernment and discipleship.
Yeah. And I would suggest to you, back to this lack of responsibility, we often think or we excuse ourselves from a responsibility that we might take to take Amazon off our phone or change our relationship to the news media. Oftentimes we think, oh, well, there's nothing I can do about it and I need to be informed of the news anyway, so I'm just going to consume as much information as I can. But maybe we should take a little bit more responsibility in the ways that we do that.
Well, because if it doesn't make you feel good, then being hyper, you know, if it's draining, then being hyper aware or like hyper involved
right.
doesn't serve anything besides and, like the ad tracker.
And the way that it's communicated to you is formative as well. We're inundated with a very adversarial model of communication, especially when it comes to politics. And that is modeled to us, and then we go and we model, we practice it. It's very difficult for us to get out of an adversarial mindset. So we're always thinking, like, who's right and who's wrong? Who won and who lost? I don't want to lose. I don't want to be wrong. I'm going to be right. I'm going to win. And if I look at political speakers, I'm often evaluating them based on a win-lose scenario, which is actually not a great way to look at life, is win-lose, right? Either or is a logical fallacy, but we live our lives within a logical fallacy instead of, you know, like both and. Or not, there doesn't always have to be a loser. There doesn't always have to be somebody who's out, right? The Samaritan doesn't always have to be out. Sometimes the Samaritan's the hero of the story. So that logic is always in the gospel logic, but it's not always in our cultural logic or our cultural mind. Okay, so I'll leave you with scripture, which is a good way to part. Colossians 3:17, which I think is a really great summary for discipleship. Because it incorporates all the things in our speaking and in our thinking and in our actions, that we do those all those things as Christ, our model, our mentor, our teacher. And as we do those, we're formed into the shape of Jesus, and we're also modeling that to other people. It really covers all the bases well, right? And scripturally, we're also told repeatedly, like, how do we have clean lips? Have you ever heard that? Yeah? Give me clean lips, O Lord, and put a guard over my heart. Because as Jesus reminds us, whatever comes out of our mouth reveals what is in our heart. So being a disciple is actually hard work. Hard, especially since all the things that you all named, you all told me are almost impossible. But we have a great system. Wow. We have a great counter system to the culture. And I would suggest to you as well, look at the Beatitudes. Some of you are like, I don't know what that is. But it's people always ask me, like, what discipleship should I do? And I'm like, well, Jesus had this 8-step discipleship program called the Beatitudes. We should check it out sometime. It's in the Gospel of Matthew. That's the more extensive one. And it's like the 8 things, right? Which are, okay, do I have like 4 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to skip some stuff. Okay. Just very quickly, I want to invite you to look at the Beatitudes a little bit differently. So who knows what the first one is, the first Beatitude? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who are ready to surrender, who are empty and realize that I have a problem and I can't do it on my own. This has worn me down and I don't want to do it anymore. And I'm ready to surrender. Ready. That's step one, right? You got to be ready. All right, step two, what's the second Beatitude? Come on, Episcopalians. Yes, blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who keep breaking their hearts for the suffering of the world until they open. And then we follow our heartbreak out into the world. How cool of a thing is that? Okay, what's the third Beatitude? That's 7. It's everybody's favorite. Blessed are the meek. Yeah, blessed are the meek. Not disempowering, actually. Moses is called meek. Jesus is called meek. Jesus refers to himself as meek. Those folks are not disempowered, right? Meek, praus is the Greek term. It actually means like a powerful warhorse that has been tamed. Blessed are those who have been tamed by God. Blessed are those who are power under control. But not our control, right? Like the tame, we've been bridled by God. And so we follow the movement of God's Spirit. That's a pretty empowering way to see meekness. Okay, what's the fourth Beatitude? Blessed are hungering and thirsting for righteousness. Blessed are those who want to make the world more wonderful for everyone around them. How cool would it be if every Christian on planet Earth thought, got up in the morning and thought, how can I make the world more wonderful for people around me today? What a cool practice that would be. The fifth is, blessed are the merciful, which I think means blessed are those who can transform anything that comes their way into love and compassion. How can we do the most compassionate thing at the most compassionate time? Not the right thing or the good thing, but the most compassionate thing at the most compassionate time. And that's a type of fearlessness, a liberation that Jesus wants us to step into. Blessed are the pure in heart, which I think a good interpretation is a clarity of heart. Blessed are those who have a clarity of heart. Blessed are those who see the divisiveness clearly and can offer mercy into those spaces and then be bridge builders, which is the next one. Blessed are the peacemakers. We have clarity of purpose and we see the fragmentation and we step into our bridge building role to transform the broken pieces, the fragmented pieces. And then the last one is never give up, always surrender. Never, never, never give up. So I offer this because I feel like the Beatitudes are a great place for us to start practicing our discipleship. And we've never looked at them before. Because we don't, you know, they're kind of cryptic a little bit. They're like Christian koans.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.